United States versus Williams.
No relation to Judge Williams?
I don't think so.
Should there be a disclaimer?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Stephen Williams appearing for Darius Williams. Your Honors, if ever there was a case where a guideline sentence could be considered unreasonable, this is it. This is a young man who has been convicted of essentially the offense of being a felon and doing conduct which would normally be legal in anyone else's hands. He has one prior felony offense for aggravated battery and nothing else. That prior felony occurred when he was 16 years old and involved conduct that under most other circumstances would have been charged as a misdemeanor, and we wouldn't even be here talking about this today. Looking at this young man's record and his personal family circumstances, his personal history, it is easy to see how this could have happened and why it is that he chose to purchase a firearm and carry it for his protection and for the protection of his family. Now, I would note, of course, that the district court did talk about this factor and considered it. But I think that it was dismissed out of hand, and that is evident from one of the statements that the district court made. There's just no excuse for a felon possessing a firearm. Now, we're not contesting that fact. We are not sitting here saying before the court that there is an excuse for it. If there was, we wouldn't have pled guilty. He pled guilty because there weren't any excuses. But the issue at hand is what's a reasonable sentence. And there are mitigating factors that are directly related to this young man's tragic personal circumstances that contribute directly by, and you could see it through looking at it as logic, common sense tells you, this is a person who's been victimized, his family has been victimized, and it makes sense that even under the circumstances of being a convicted felon, he might do this. First of all, obviously, the circumstances of his mother's death, which occurred only 7 months prior to his actions which led to the aggravated felony or the aggravated battery. His mother was murdered by a serial killer, and that is something that received tremendous amount of attention in the news media, something to which he was exposed to include speculation about her status as a prostitute and a drug addict. And, of course, this is something he had to live through as a child. He had to live through the fact that he had a mother who was not there for him. He had to live through all of that that was involved in that upbringing. And it wasn't just his mother that wasn't there for him. Of course, his father as well. As the PSR shows plainly, his father had been convicted of this very offense that he stands convicted of and is doing federal supervised release. So he's certainly suffers from what can be termed a lack of youthful guidance. But this goes way beyond the pale of your typical case where you can look at someone's past and say, yes, there's a lack of youthful guidance. In this case, he has horrible, tragic personal circumstances that relate directly to victimization of his family that would cause someone to be concerned about further violence being directed against them.
Mr. Williams, what do you think would be an appropriate sentence in this case?
Your Honors, at the sentencing level or at the district court level, we asked for a sentence no more than 6 months. We actually asked for a sentence of 6 months house arrest. Alternatively, we requested that the court would not do that. 6 months imprisonment would adequately address the factors that are enumerated in Section 3553A. It would be a sentence that is sufficient, but no more than necessary to address those factors. And I believe to include addressing the factors that the sentencing court raised, which it was most concerned with. Certainly, and I think we can point to deterrence as being one of them. And given this young man's history, I think a six-month sentence would certainly have provided that adequate deterrence. His previous criminal conduct involved getting a sentence of probation, which he successfully completed. He had anger management classes, which he successfully completed. 3 months prior to this offense, he's pistol-whipped at gunpoint, and he buys a gun. He has two small children at home. He lives in an environment where there's a lot of crime. And he's been living with his girlfriend for an extensive period of time with these kids. And it's understandable. And certainly he admitted as much that, yes, this was a bad decision, not something that I would do again, obviously, because of the consequences. But given his circumstances, a six-month sentence certainly would have been enough. And I think that also goes to, you know, what considerations did the district court take into account, again, that it thought were most important? Avoiding unwarranted sentencing disparities seemed to be a big one, and that's why the court seems to have chosen a guideline sentence. But the court itself noted that there were mitigating factors that were unusual for Mr. Williams, that the court didn't typically see in defendants, to include the responsibility he's exhibited with his family, taking care of his kids, living with his girlfriend, providing support, working a job. And these tragic circumstances go well beyond what is typically seen. As a consequence of that, the sentencing disparity that we were requesting, we cannot argue that it wouldn't be a disparity with respect to other individuals convicted of this offense with the same background in terms of criminal history points and this offense. But the disparity is warranted in this case due to his particular circumstances. This happens to be one of those circumstances where, as the court has said, it may be a rare case indeed where a non-guideline sentence is appropriate, or rather where a guideline sentence is unreasonable. This is that case. We would ask that the court vacate the sentence and remand it for resentencing on those grounds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Ms. Scott?
My name is Angela Scott. I'm Assistant U.S. Attorney representing the government in this matter. The issue here is whether or not the judge imposed a reasonable sentence on Mr. Williams. As this court has recognized, a sentence within the guideline range is presumptively reasonable. The guideline range here was 30 to 37 months, and the district court sentenced Mr. Williams to 30 months. In addition, the district court, in imposing the sentence that he did, relied not on the guidelines, but also on the factors that are set forth in Section 3553. Specifically, the district court did look at Mr. Williams' tragic life that he had as a youth. In fact, the district court said, this defendant has had a tragic life. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. However, the district court went on to, and even the district court even said, he's to be commended for the stability that he's provided to his family, to his children. But there's just no excuse here for having a gun. And the district court said one of the goals here is to deter others from having guns. And the district court pointed out that how many crimes have we heard about where that involved a gun? And, in fact, it pointed to one of the things that Mr. Williams had pointed out was that he had been the victim of a carjacking just 3 months before this. And the district court looked at that as an example of why we need to keep guns out of the hands of people in this community.
Can you remind me, what was the original plea agreement and the recommendation of the government with respect to sentencing? Because you acknowledged that this was an unusual circumstance.
Right, and we did.
And unusual factors. And when we, particularly when we look at the underlying conviction and the level of representation he had there. I mean, what was the government's position?
This was an open plea, so there was no recommendation that the government agreed to make. However, we did believe that based on the factors of this case that a low-end recommendation was appropriate, and that's what we made at the sentencing hearing. That was something that we decided to do on our own.
It was a low-end within the guideline range,
yes,
right?
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And, in fact, the district court did look at the underlying offense, which was the aggravated battery that Mr. Williams has referred to. The district court recognized, however, that this was a pretty serious offense. This involved Mr. Williams throwing a chair at a school security guard officer, which required that person to go to a hospital to seek medical treatment. So it was not something that was just that wasn't violent at all.
How was this case charged in federal court? The arrest was made by a state trooper.
Yes, sir.
What's your arrangement to?
Well, they present cases to us that they believe are deserve federal attention, we look at them and decide whether or not they should be taken federal. In this case, I handled this case from the beginning, and it was my determination based on my opinion based on the fact that he had a loaded gun in his trunk that we should take it federal, and that's what we did.
And the day that this big fight took place with the security guard was the day that would have been his mother's birthday.
That's correct, Your Honor. And again, pointing to the incident, the carjacking, the district court again recognized that this was a cruel world that the defendant was a part of, but that there was no excuse for having a gun. And the district court also pointed out that, you know, based on this incident, as I said before, that this was an example of why the defendant's sentence should be sufficient to deter others. Because the district court said the message that needs to be sent is that we need to stop having people in this community carrying firearms so they don't have the opportunity to use those firearms. The district court also looked at the defendant's current history and the fact that he had lived with his fiancée and he had two children. And again, the district court commended the defendant for providing stability to his children. So the district court did consider the defendant's personal history and characteristics. The district court considered the seriousness of the offense. Mr. Williams calls it a nonviolent offense, but as the district court pointed out, that this is a serious offense because of the possibility that this gun might have been used against another. And the district court even went further and said, well, what would have happened if he hadn't have been found with this gun at the instant that he was, and that he was depressed and somebody would have pushed the wrong buttons, what would have happened then?
Following up a little on Judge Kaney's question, is there always an automatic referral when it's a felon in possession of a gun? Because frequently that's done because sentences are higher in federal court. And sometimes it's a policy of the state to do that.
Well, of course, with the Project Safe Neighborhoods Initiative, mm-hmm. One of the things the government has been looking at are cases involving guns, felons with guns. It's not an automatic referral. Usually it depends on the circumstances of the offense, and it also depends on the criminal history.
And then this probably isn't the first case of this type that you've handled.
No, ma'am, it's not.
Yeah. I guess my question is, isn't this a very unusual circumstance? I mean, in terms of a defendant and the type of situation he's in.
Well, I don't believe that it's an unusual circumstance. He had a tragic life, but there are many, many defendants who come in with the same excuse that they've had a tragic life. And as the district court said...
And they've had situations where their mother's been killed by a serial killer.
Well, maybe not in that particular instance.
And in the carjacking 3 months before. I mean, it just... seems like a very unusual situation, and I appreciate the government made the recommendation of 30 months, but I can't imagine that there are many defendants that walk in with this kind of background.
Well, and he does have an unusual background, but the question here is whether or not the district court took it into account, and the district court did take into account his background, and the district court found, in fact, concluded that it would issue this sentence of 30 months whether he was relying on the guidelines or relying on the statute. And the district court said, quite frankly, because I think it's reasonable for this circumstance, because I strongly believe that firearms should not be in the hands of somebody in this circumstance and with this kind of background, these kinds of issues that this young man has had in his life.
I guess I was getting to, and of course this is none of our business, the prosecutor's sort of decision in cases like this. It just strikes me as being a very, very unusual situation, and I won't ask any more questions about that.
If there's nothing further, the government would ask at this time that the district court sentence of 30 months be upheld as reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. Mr. Williams, how much time? You have 3 minutes, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Is the defendant in custody at this time?
He is, Your Honor. He is in Yankton, South Dakota, and his family has moved up there as well. to be near him, and his girlfriend, who's now his wife, has actually gotten a job working for the state so that she can be nearby him. Your Honor,
I'm sorry, one other question. How long has he been in custody?
He's been in custody since this charge was
November
filed.
November 2004.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honors, I would note that while it is true that the district court considered these factors, I think that's clear. I don't think it gave him enough consideration. And if what the district court's reasoning for imposing what amounts to a guideline sentence is sufficient, then there would be no circumstance when a non-guideline sentence could be appropriate for someone carrying a gun. I mean, if the primary end-all, be-all consideration is we don't want felons carrying guns, therefore we're not going to take these mitigating factors.
One of the reasons the area in which he was living is bad is because people carry guns.
And there's no disputing that, Your Honor.
And how would you approach your approach? You can carry a gun if you've got a bad background and bad things have happened to you, but you can't otherwise?
Absolutely not. In fact, we're conceding. You can't excuse the conduct. It is an offense.
So what you're talking about is an abuse of discretion, and we're determined from here that the trial judge abused his discretion in imposing a 30-month sentence.
I don't know that it's been cast in those terms before, that the sentence is reviewed for abuse of discretion.
I would
submit that it's unreasonable.
Well, that's an abuse of discretion.
I don't know that it's to be
how
given
would you, what sort of standard would we use?
Well, the standard that the Supreme Court, of course, has proposed is what's reasonable. And
yeah,
so,
I said, but what reasonable, you know, is in the eye of the beholder. I want to know. What do we tell them? It's reasonable to say if you find something like this, you give them 6 months, you give them 10 months, you give them. We establish a new guideline. We've given them, the Congress has given them authority to do this and a discretion to do it. All he has to do is be reasonable. So you want us to say that the low end of the guideline, so all set up, was presumptively reasonable under the statute, is unreasonable. And I don't know what standards we use to do that.
Your Honor, may I take some additional time just to respond to your question?
No, you got some time. When it runs out, somebody will hit you. Go ahead.
I would note a couple of things. First of all, the statute itself does not provide for a presumption of reasonableness, and I don't know that there's any statutory authority for that. But secondly,
never mind the statutory. There is a presumption that when you're in the guidelines, you're presumptively reasonable.
That is true in this circuit. While we would not concede that that's proper in this case, I would say
that you want us to change that aspect.
Well, and in any case, we believe, as I've stated in my briefs, and I'll state here again today, that even if you apply the presumption, it's sufficient. If there's ever a case where it's been rebutted, it is certainly this one.
And well, I appreciate your strong feelings on this subject. I just wonder what standard you thought we would use for the next one around. What would we tell the district courts? But never mind. That's not a question. That's my problem, not yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you know what the state – does the state have a comparable felon possession statute?
It does.
And what's the penalty range for that?
I'm not certain on that, Your Honor. Obviously, those sentencing practices are significantly different. I believe the range, though, is up to 7 years, I believe.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.